Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. We have decided we are banning cheat meals. No one's getting one anymore. Okay, well, maybe that's not the case, but today we want to discuss cheat meals versus refeed meals and when which should apply. And with that being said, we probably say we don't really condone the word cheat meal now that we're in this politically correct bodybuilding Instagram culture, right? We have friendlier words, associations for cheat meals of just untracked eating off of plan, right, Luke?
It's all the same thing. It's just making you feel not quite as bad.
Yeah, we use cheat meals though, like as our our clickbait, just because the people understand what it is. Like you say, an untracked meal. That seems vague now, but cheat meals. It's very understandable. It's something that's typically going to be high fat, untracked, high caloric, and a large excursion in calories away from what potentially your base plan is, but that might not always be the case, right? Someone might have good control and not go on a wild caloric roller coaster ride that leaves them, who knows, in disaster. But not always the case. But there's some cons around it. There's some applications that we should discuss of should you be using the cheat meal? Should you be using the refeed meal or refeed day? With our refeed still being a caloric excursion, right, to a degree, but in a more controlled setting and primarily carbohydrate-based, typically, and spread out over the course of a day. And this might even go for longer than a day, with the idea being trying to replenish glycogen levels in a depleted state. Now, some people try to do that with the cheat meal as well. However, there'll be some issues that we should cover now, and I think the first one that we should probably get into is the issues just around using a cheat meal in general. Like what could be problematic situations around that? And first one being, well, it could encourage binge eating.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Luke?
Yeah, I think it's a slippery slope to start to go down. We already know that highly palatable foods are going to lead to increased hunger signaling, and then that's going to kind of continue to drive that desire to want to eat, especially when this gets used within like a dieting setting. Like I've had people come to me where they've ran preps, and actually Emily, with the prep that she did with a different coach before I prepped her, she said that like the off plan meals had no guidance around them. And so she just thought it was a free for all and it would turn into this pint of Ben and Jerry's with like a burger and fries from a place called Mugshots. And it's just like, such a like she's taking in more caloric intake from that one meal than she is across like three or four, right? And so it becomes this psychological dependency and reliance on like, I can't wait for that day to come. And then we start to get into, as that continues, it starts to go down the slippery slope of binge eating. Also a very poor association with food. And for me, I think it's why you end up seeing bodybuilders long-term transitioning out of bodybuilding struggle so badly with transitioning back into kind of like regular life, is they haven't gone through the process of elevating their dieting skills to be able to still make good decisions and stay within good nutrition parameters when they go out to eat.
Yeah, I know with having the restrict and just eating pattern that is like that, it's easy to fall into the eating disorder. Basically, it does represent an eating disorder, right? Just that type of pattern. So it's all or nothing. And a lot of the people that when the personalities that get into bodybuilding, like we're highly neurotic, OCD, like controlling. So we are very all or nothing already. And so the only way that we know how to do these things is you're all in or you're all out. There's no moderation in place. So then you give someone this time where like, okay, just set the diet aside. And now you go the complete opposite direction. And then you have to go back to being restricted. It just perturbates that. And you're teaching anyone anything about how maybe you should just be implementing these foods that you want already existing into your meal plan. But you're right, that cycle continues. I mean, my first show I did, It was a time before we knew a lot about, you know, we thought cheat meals were still like, you know, boost up this metabolic rate and hormone levels and you get all these benefits. So I would have my weekly, being in Texas, a Whataburger. And then it's when like the frozen yogurt places were kind of popular around. Yeah. So then I would go to Orange Leaf. I don't even know if they're around anymore, but Orange Leaf. And I'd get like a loaded down like Orange Leaf. And then I would get home and the sodium rise. I was vascular, looked crazy. Like, oh, this is perfect. This is going in the right direction. Right. But when it turned, I had a diet so hard during the week because I was eating so many damn calories on this one day. Anyway, live and learn. But all week long, all I thought about was like, oh my gosh, my Whataburger and my frozen yogurt. It's was so like focused on that. It made dieting even harder. So if you like remove a lot of that hyper palatable stuff, it just makes your dieting process a lot easier. Now, I wasn't binge eating. Like I had controlled, like this is what I get every time. However, with someone that fell in that pattern, man, it would be easy to go and overeat. And just one more little story here. Another time coaching way before I even bodybuild, I was instructed to do a cheat meal, but the instruction was have what you want, but you only have 45 minutes to do it. And that was like a challenge to me, like, no problem. You don't know what I can do in 45 minutes. That's how I took that. So it was like, you know, get all the pizza in, like I could put down a large pizza easily in 45 minutes, which who knows, what was that, 4,000 calories or something? probably the one, the pizza that I got with all like quadruple meat and everything. So, anyway, like those were unproductive protocols to use and be implemented for physique goals. Right. And that's, I want to say that, Luke, is that our focus here is we coach physique competitors. So lifestyle clients, like there's a lot greater flexibility that's going to be allowed within that. But there's times in prep where it just needs to be more structured and we don't want to take people away from their physique goals and their timeline by having it turn into this binge where it might take 2 weeks to get that time back. And another point being is that, and you mentioned into it, Luke, is that you do make all of a sudden there's good foods and there're bad foods, right? And it's just that black and white dieting that takes place now.
Yeah, and it starts to lead down this path of a very poor relationship with food and not really even able to make like good decisions from like a critical thinking standpoint. And then on top of that, like and coming from someone who struggled with it in my early bodybuilding career quite a bit, it's almost the dependency part that I don't like for the people who do struggle with it to the highest level. It's like you get to that point during the week and you sit there in front of that food and it's like this anxiousness is just built up across the whole week. And then you take that first bite and it's like this like weight lifted off your shoulders and relaxation. It's like, this is getting almost into like drug addiction type. I mean, and dopamine can be very, you know, addicting. Where it's just taking someone who's going to potentially long-term have issues with it. But then on the flip side of that, from a performance standpoint, it's not really giving you any data. Like when we, especially within a contest prep, if we're taking time out of the dieting schedule that we've mapped out on this ideal rate of loss, I'm going to want some information on what foods do they digest well? Are there any foods I'm going to load with that potentially drive GI distress? What does the response look like post-loading? And sure, maybe the first one or two high days aren't really lean enough where they're great data for peak week, but you can already start to get some information about how people digest foods and what foods to use during this increases. And it's always something you can learn from it. It's just where in the prep, what data you're pulling.
Yeah. And based around that too, it's like, well, when someone's not fully already in the throes of being super contest lean, they're not going to be that depleted. So like your initial one is like, it's a smaller introduction of an amount of carbohydrate. You can kind of gauge what that response was. Then maybe you adjust higher for the next one. And as they get leaner, that would be justifiable versus when they're not that lean to begin with. And you still have this cheat meal or untracked meal and they go off the rails when they're already not very lean, you could throw back on several pounds quickly. And people say like, oh, one meal won't make you gain weight. No, hell yeah. I've absolutely seen people gain weight doing it. So I think it's just a more conservative approach to work up food as someone gets leaner, to actually get that data collection to be more productive later on, versus trying to work backwards. You're like, oh, whoa, that was way too much food. Let me cut back next time. Then you're like, that was still too much food. So I think just doing this more structured refeeding in a contest prep, slowly titrating up, would be the safest bet, so we don't lose your timeline, which we know time is of crucial essence to getting someone stage lean. And another point around this too is, like, back when I was doing my Whataburger and my Froyo, is that the benefits around a large cheat meal, as far as any type of change metabolically or hormone wise is concerned, is just not really present from the current literature state that we've seen. That it's just this acute feeding where you do have a raise in the thermic effect of food because you're eating such a large food volume. However, that's just short-lived during the time of that meal. So there's no long-term changes for your leptin or thyroid hormone levels. You know, some people will say, like, they might have the relaxation of going out and maybe some better sleep could drop some cortisol levels down. And maybe that weight loss that was occurring this whole time actually comes to fruition from water loss. However, it might be filled back in and blurred by the further increase of sodium that is to follow over the next few days and come back up, which you brought up a great point to this, Luke, is that the digestive issue. Some people are very sensitive to these type of foods as well. So you might throw off digestion for a couple days too, which on top of that could be a bit problematic. So for the digestive reasons and the lack of hormonal influence that it really creates, it's hard to justify the untracked meal. Would you say there's times though in prep where it is justifiable or allowable, because people still do it? Radio silence from Luke.
You kind of left me. I wasn't expecting the question because my view on it's a pretty harsh. I don't really see it fitting within high performance athletes. I really don't. Like, if your aim is to be the best version of yourself on stage, no matter what, then we shouldn't be doing things that have all these potential negatives, where the only potential positive benefit is a psychological break, where you could even plan something that's a little bit more scheduled, provides that psychological break, and at least you get something out of that and you kind of know what's going in, right? Like, maybe it's a date night out with your significant other, or you have like a macro tracked amount of sushi that you know kind of what's going in. But I don't see it fitting within the confines of a contest prep for someone who truly wants to pull the most out of their physique within a prep.
Yeah, I can see that. So you did bring up a point that it basically gets to how you could do this. Yeah. Is for the individual that has the timeline and the dietary flexibility and intuition to be able to move some macros around to fit in some meal that isn't always structured every day in their plan. And I know some people do flexible dieting and fully macro approaches. And I think as you get further into prep, you might need to tighten that down farther to more of a structured meal plan. Mm-hmm. So you can get, like Luke is saying, more predictive in those responses and have a good gauge for moving into your finally your peak week and show day. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing some macro adjustments. It's just the person still needs to have a degree of control, because if you are moving into adjusting macros for something that is hyper palatable, that still could spark on like someone to want to overeat those foods and make the dieting process harder. But there are people that can do that well and is not problematic. So maybe it is going off to have a meal where you know you could have this item which fits what's in your weekly allotment. And I've done this myself with even having sushi. But it's a very controlled, and I know the responses because I've practiced this for a long time to be able to know that. But in the earlier on beginner, you might not have that autonomy built up yet to be able to do so. Maybe some coaching guidance could be there to where, hey, you have, go have this exact meal, right? And realizing that client psychology, that might be okay. Mm. But it has to be a real gauge, I think, on the coaching end to extend that. I think we should be leaning towards more sustainable methods of bodybuilding that allow some degree of flexibility and learning on the client end, but without any sacrifice for what that competitor is coming to you for, trying to be the best in the world, essentially. That's why I would compete, right? Yeah. And so that's the standard that I hold up. So if it takes away from that, I wouldn't want to be doing it either. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to today's podcast. Are you struggling to hit your peak on show day? Feeling lost in the offseason? Upgrade your coaching game with J3 University. Our program covers everything from offseason to contest prep to peak week, all based from real client results. Along with our comprehensive physique curriculum, you'll also get access to our forums with our J3U team to answer any questions you have and live Q&A sessions to further your coaching and athlete experience. We are the source of education for top IFBB pros and coaches. Join us to elevate the coaching standard at J3 University. Let's get back to today's podcast.
Yeah, and I think kind of the context of like macro swapping, I don't classify within like off plan eating or cheat meals, I guess is kind of maybe where I potentially differentiate it, because like I have people I prep fully on macros that are just that skilled of dieters, like Emily King. Like, I haven't sent her a meal plan this whole prep. She's got her foods that she sticks to. She just wants macros. It's what fits her best. And she's going to be ready like 4 weeks out. Like, it's not an issue in that front. And so that's where the untracked dynamic is kind of where my brain starts to go, like, this doesn't fit. The untracked dynamic. It's just, it doesn't fit. I don't think
there needs to be some level of tracking that takes place.
Yeah.
Even for myself in the off season, right? Like, I know the foods that I can go and have a meal, and picking these certain items with where I'm like, leave this sauce off and leave this off. In a way, I am controlling the calorie content and I know the response. So there's a degree of tracking, in a sense, a measurement that's taking place, but it's just highly scaled back from me taking my food scale and
right.
Removing the rice from my sushi roll and weighing my rice and putting it back to, no, I'm just kidding. No, I hope no one does that. but yeah, you know, if you learn the response for, you know, where I have these different places that I go to, and I know this doesn't impact my weekly outcome, like in a way this is tracked to a degree.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But prep is a different scenario, right?
Yeah. So 100%. So we've talked about why we don't do the cheat meals. We probably should talk about why we would do refeeds and kind of some of the tools and directions that we would, how we would go about doing that. Cause I think there's certainly a bunch of different ways to kind of map that out for a client.
Yeah. So I mean, with the refeed, I see it becoming more effective. We talked about this on last podcast episodes where beginning of a contest prep, more of the issue is managing fatigue and removing training stress over having someone that's being more diet fatigue, which, what do we define that as? Let's just say like, hey, more glycogen depleted to where you're running out of fuel substrate for training to support it in recovery. Now, as you get farther into the process of dieting, that's where it becomes the issue, where you start to get more a little flat and the glycogen levels are low and you see that stamina start dropping off to the tail end of training and just recovery starts getting smashed and you start building more fatigue. And so having some extra a day of increasing carbohydrate, restore glycogen levels, would aid training performance. And then that would uphold tissue in those later parts of prep. So how do we uphold glycogen levels and performance? Well, that's going to be primarily carbohydrate based, right? So these refeed days should be higher carbohydrate. And usually we're holding fats and protein relatively static and just bringing in some extra carbohydrates in that time period. And that frequency might increase as we get leaner. And that in turn is also lowering our caloric deficit for the week, which slows down the fat loss rate, which is what you'd want for the greatest muscle retention. So how this differentiates from your just one meal that's really high in potentially fat and carbohydrate is we're spreading this out throughout the day, which it mirrors really well for what you do even on a show day or loading. And it also digestibility wise could be a lot more predictive of just eating a little bit more of the same carbohydrates that you're already tolerating versus throwing in the oddball meal where you don't know what the outcome is going to be. Yep. So in general, that this is kind of the main difference here. It's usually a 24-hour, sometimes a 48-hour period of just a higher carbohydrate intake, with the idea being trying to restore training performance and then get back to a productive fat loss state and just rinse and repeat that.
Yeah, and I think when you're doing these too, I think when you get to these latter stages, a lot of it is about slowing rate of loss more than it is about like instigating progress for most people. Because like that's how I'm using it as a tool a lot of times, is like tissue retention, potentially slowing rate of loss for people that are moving too fast. When I start making them robust in nature, like extremely large feedings across multiple days. And then I think that's kind of where, when you start to talk about using refeeds, you can start to dive into the different sense of like 1, 2, 3 days, amounts added and things along those lines. But it's all going to be driving training performance and tissue retention on the back portion of prep, where high rates of loss and lack of training performance can really kind of leave someone, you know, in a pretty bad spot by the end.
Yeah, with the refeed, I mean, I think even initially the idea was like, oh, we're going to, now we know finally how to kickstart metabolic rate and get that hormone influence. It's not the cheat meal. You should have more carbohydrate all for a 24-hour period. Now we figured it out. And now it's even still like, now the research is like, well, even this is very short-lived hormonally. Like once you get right back into like some glycogen depleted state, you have some like leptin levels that might change a little bit, but then get skewed right back down. So you're not really making any long-term impact on hormones. I think more so it's the fatigue management side that could be there and slowing the deficit and upholding training that in turn leads to more productive fat loss. But I don't think it's the direct application of the high carbs in those moments that creates this metabolic change that is then, you know, boosting your fat loss afterwards. I think it just helps you sustain productive fat loss that continues. Now, how do you gauge whether it's 1, 2, or 3 days? It's very, very client dependent. I've seen where I have refeeds where I give a client a refeed day and their weight drops down, which could be a positive and that could be okay. However, I've had some clients where they're just neat, like boost way up and they're just more active and it ends up just not sticking with them at all. I'm like, oh, okay, we need more food for another day. And I have the timeline to do so because they're ahead in fat loss. And then that might spur on like the second day. For longer periods than that, it usually is coming down to a client where I actually do need to pull them away from the dieting process because they need the psychological break in the physical break to drop off that much fatigue. It was just getting unproductive. And usually that's occurring when for some reason we didn't set the timeline up right to begin with. And we run into that diet break being needed. That's usually pushing back shows.
Yeah.
Is that what you see in like the longer than the 48-hour refeed?
8 to 9 times out of 10, yes. I do think there's a case where you're not as aggressive enough on the refeed potentially in the first day or two, where someone speeds up to the point that pulling them back into a deficit is just going to take them too far, where I would extend it into 3 and 4 days sometimes. And the only reason I say this is exactly what I do with Emily. So Emily gets to a point in prep where like the rate of loss, just like it kicks up. It goes from like 0.7 to 0.8% up to like 1.5 and it goes like that. And so for me, it's like, she's not in a state right now where I need to run anywhere close to 1.5%. So I let her tick off a little bit and then I rip her back from it. And I let her tick off a little bit. Arguably at there's a point in that I just changed the base plan to slow the rate of loss. But yeah, the first time or two, when I'm like, okay, is this what I'm seeing or is it not? I might just like add a third day or add a fourth day, depending on kind of what I'm seeing.
And I will implement refeeds like that too. If I have someone that moves real fast over the week, it's like, okay, let me start and keep this high day in. And then if that's like rinse and repeat, I'm like, okay, we can leave the high day in because it provides a lot of benefit, right?
Yeah.
Or I could boost up that high day even higher to adjust for that. Rather than, because I've had times where you spread the food out now and you boost up the baseline diet, then the next week just doesn't move much at all. You're like, oh no.
That's why I get hesitant about it, because I know they move on the old diet. So it's like, we'll just creep a couple high days and then rip it down for a couple days and then keep going.
That's like the old like Chad Nichols approach, right? Like he diets them super hard and it has like one like ridiculously high day. That way you just like ensure progress happens during the week, which I think you could do that to a degree, right? You ensure progress happens. You have this higher day, but I think it's getting to a point where your high day is getting ridiculous. And even that day is now almost becoming the same psychology of your cheat meal. Like, oh, I can't wait for this day. Like I'm dying during the week. Like, please, please give me an extra grain of rice. And so I think that at that point we just spread a little bit more throughout the day to where you have better training and recovery every single day over just one moment, which probably isn't living out throughout the rest of the week anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, 100%.
Other things. So around these refeeds, I think once we get to those later stages of dieting, that's when it will become a bit better of a gauge for establishing what you might start someone with loading. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have that prior, like obviously you could load someone harder than that, but without knowing that at all, you're kind of shooting in the dark and you might overshoot it the first day. And if you don't practice it out a few days out from the show, that might leave you having to really do a lot of triage leading into your actual show day. So a few advantages here for the refeed day. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we like cheat meals versus refeeds. I think refeeds really has a lot of advantages for the high level competitor with these serious physique goals. Is there anything, Luke, that we left out within this?
No, not within a contest prep setting. I think there's potentially a discussion about the reins not coming off in off season too much either. Like, yeah, sure, they're a little bit more untracked, but you talked about this, like you're going to the sushi restaurant, not putting certain sauces on your sushi, things like that. I really hesitate being around the psychology of cheat meal or anything along those lines outside of the mental break, because we still in the off season need to maximize the duration of progress across an off season, where when you have these untracked meals, like you're mentioning, they still need to be good decisions. And so like, I still always encourage like better decision-making. And if it's like, you know, once a blue moon that you have a meal like that, sure. Like life, you need to enjoy life. Right. But it's definitely something that I think for most competitors, it's not, unless you're like a really high skilled dieter, it's not something that fits within most plans.
Yeah. There's some like rare exception clients that are extremely high calorie where I have them like purposely eat off plan several times during the week. But still it's structured because I don't want them to go eat some pizza and then like they can't eat the next day, because that's not the idea of it. It's just to get something calorie dense in to keep boosting up the surplus, because they actually need that much to support it, which is not doable through your normal like, you know, low fat foods that we try to utilize. So you almost need something that highly palatable just so they're able to get the foods in. Those are rare cases. So don't go on Instagram and be like, man, why is this guy eating like three burgers a week or something? It's like, man, that probably isn't reflective of what for the average people won't be able to do without turning into a sloppy mess. Like you look at who eats three cheeseburgers a week. Those physiques usually aren't the ones getting on bodybuilding stages. They're usually ones that are on the couch on Sundays cheering on football teams. So it's just the case. But anyway, with cheat meals, it's not, you know, we want to get away from demonizing the eating off of plan from even the strict bodybuilding approach, because that's not right or what we promote either.
Correct.
But there's ways to have flexibility to where we can get away from having good versus bad foods and also having autonomy as ourselves as bodybuilders. So we enjoy food and don't think that being hardcore eating plain chicken and rice is the only way, because that's not sustainable and you won't learn anything for when you do want to leave the bodybuilding stages to just be a normal person and enjoy food. So there's ways where you can have a mix of both, but ultimately if you're looking for this ultimate physique on stage, there will be sacrifices in the dietary flexibility that you're going to be able to have. And some of that is just completely going off the reins and eating untracked. So let us know down below, cheat meal versus refeeds, who wins for you on contest prep. Till next time, we will talk to you then.